Welcome to
the Plant-Based Podcast.
In case you didn't know already, plants are amazing. You can
eat them,
wear them,
drink them,
nourish your skin with them,
grow them,
love them,
and be inspired by them. So why not join us on the Plant-Based Podcast as we speak to the movers, shakers, and growers in this amazing plant world.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Launched in 2019, their award-winning liquid fertilizer and soil conditioner is made entirely from maize. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg. Enter PBP15 for a 15% discount as a PBP subscriber.
So we're here today with Matthew Pottage, who's the curator of the Garden at Wisley, which is probably the most well-known of the Royal Horticultural Society's gardens, and he's also a regular panellist on BBC Gardeners Question Time. I first met Matt when I was doing the Alan Titchmarsh show about 15 or more years ago on my actual first TV appearance, and Matt was there with a giant bonsai, and we hit it off pretty much straight away for a love of plants, and I just knew that we had to get him on the podcast because he's got a real love of one particular group of plants. So in the episode today, we'll talk to him about his rise through the ranks at the UK's probably most famous garden, and we'll also tap into his knowledge on one very special group of plants, and it might be one that you won't expect, and one that doesn't get as much love as it should these days. It's going to be conifers. So let's kick off, Ellen.
Let's kiss off. We can't kiss off. We're doing this by Zoom. Matt, one thing we always try to start the podcast off with is giving the listeners a kind of an idea about how you got into horticulture in the first place. So where did you train? Where did your love of horticulture come from? And then how you ended up at Wisley?
So I think we always blame my love of obsession with gardening and plants with my grandma's love. And she was a really keen gardener. There's no one professional in my family that's kind of been in horticulture as a proper career or as an industry professional. And she was this very, very keen hobby gardener. And I spent a lot of time with her growing up. And she was crazy about both plants and animals. And they're two loves that I've absolutely taken from her. And it always just seemed logical that when I left school, I would go in to train in gardening because it was just the thing that I wanted to do in all my spare time. Even when I was at school, I was looking after plants in the school. I used to volunteer after school to look after houseplants in a local restaurant and in the hospital and in an old people's home, simply because I used to walk past those going to and from school. And the houseplants were a disaster. And I've always been a bit of a busybody and just, you know, if something needs doing, you get on and do it. So I went in there as a volunteer to those three places and watered their plants. And then I went on to study at Bishop Burton College, which is a beautiful college just outside of York, has an old wall garden, a lovely Victorian orangery and a cactus house, lots of other goodies. And then went on to study down at the RHS Wisley Garden from there on their student course.
Mm. No, sorry. I know we've got this rule where we put our hands up if we're going to ask a question, and I didn't put my hands up. I was just going to say that it just goes to show that pretty much everybody who we interview has that link back to their childhood and someone in their family who was into gardening, and kind of that's where the whole love of plants came from in the first place.
Yeah, I think, and it shows that any passion or enthusiasm can be infectious, and why it's so important to share, you know, your interest and your passion with people. And gardeners just seem to be such a generous bunch, you know, whether or not it's giving away some cuttings or some seeds or just telling somebody, well, you know, when I grew that, I did this and this worked really well for me. Suddenly it's common ground, isn't it? And it doesn't matter who you are, what you do, what you've done before. You know, when you're talking about plants or gardening, You know, it doesn't matter. You know, when I'm watering the two palms I've got outside our house here in West London, you know, generally Londoners aren't known for talking to each other, but people always stop and ask about them if I'm out there with a watering can. And it's really nice. It's a lovely thing. And generally it's just, you know, how do you look after them? Are these much work? Do these stay here through the winter? But, you know, they have no idea who I am. I don't know who they are, what they do. But suddenly you can chat about plants for a few minutes and it's really nice.
So at Wisley, you've risen through the ranks and you're actually curator. And that, to me, is like a meteoric rise. It's so impressive. Like, how did that happen then? What stages did you go through in your role there?
yeah, it was over a 10-year period. I went from being student to curator, which is quite cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, loads of people say, how did that happen? And then they look at you waiting for an answer, like, what did you do? and I think just, I guess, because you probably only have, you know, this podcast doesn't go on for 3 weeks, but I guess in a potted version of that, I would just say being really focused about what you do, being passionate about what you do, working hard. I mean, I've never been somebody that watches the clock, that's always thinking, oh, it's, you know, time to start packing up now. Very much I'm thinking, what am I achieving? And what's today all about? And you do whatever you need to do to deliver a great result. And I've not always gone through my time at the RHS looking for a promotion. And these doors have just, you know, they've opened. And I've been very fortunate that people have entrusted, you know, another step up the ladder for me and given me that space to grow. And, you know, my mindset is always the same. You just work flipping hard at what you're doing. You find reasons and, you know, ways of getting things done. Everybody can come up with problems of why things can't work. You know, those people are 10 a penny. But when you're solution focused and when you have to just find ways of making things work. And, you know, that's what I've always tried to pride myself with. And then just being nice to people and having fun along the way. Because, you know, when in gardening, it's not brain surgery. You can make mistakes. You can have a laugh as you go along the way. And just try and be fun to be around. And you know what? They're pretty basic ingredients, aren't they? Yeah. But that's what's working for me.
Yeah, it is. I think we probably all sing from that same songbook, I would say. You know, just try and say yes to everything, follow through, turn up on time, you know, do a good job. It all seems so basic, but a lot of people get it wrong. And so, yeah, it's obviously done you well. tell us about Wisley, though, in a nutshell, because some listeners might be listening for the first time on the podcast, might not have any background knowledge of plants. What is Wisley and why is it so well known and such a useful place to visit if you are a new gardener or someone that's intrigued?
It is, and it started out its roots as an experimental garden and a demonstration garden, and it's still kind of very true to both of those today. So there is just a lot of diversity and a lot of different planting styles, gardening styles, and big plant collections there. You know, there's over 100 years of gardening history. So if you're interested in rhubarb or tropical orchids or heathers or different cultivars of oak tree, you know, there's just about something for everybody. And there's so many different styles. So it's very instructive. It's very educational, but it's also just very pretty if you want to have a rock cake and a wander around. So, you know, for the keenest of gardeners and for just someone having a nice day out, it's got such a lot for everybody. And I think that's why it's so loved and so treasured by so many gardeners and garden visitors.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. And you can go back time and time again and you'll always see something different. So obviously throughout all the different seasons, you see all everything that's different. But even year on year, there's always something different going on. There's like new developments. So what's going on at Wisley at the moment? Kind of what's like the recent developments that are going on? And I have to ask the question because we are recording this whilst we are all on lockdown. What is Wisley like without all of the people?
Oh, wow, yeah. That must be cool.
You know what, at the start of this, because I am still going into Wisley and we still have a smaller team kind of maintaining the key essential parts of the garden and keeping things going, at the start it's all quite novel and it's like, oh, isn't it quiet, this is so peaceful, we can get so much done. And then, you know, all the magnolias have been flowering now, the cherries are in flower, all the spring garden is kicking off, but there's no one there to see it. And now it's a little bit heartbreaking because you just think there should be people enjoying this. You know, we didn't break our back planting all these tulips last autumn for no one to see them. So yeah, it's a bit odd, Ellen, really. Yeah. But at the moment, and what we've been working on is a development at our Hilltop, which is a new science and learning building. And that is surrounded by three new gardens. So a wildlife garden, a well-being garden, and a new food garden. And they're all due to open next year. They were going to be spring 21, and they're going to probably be more like June 21 with everything that's been going on. And they will showcase those three real strong threads. So how gardening has to go hand in hand with wildlife and nature. Also the benefits it brings our well-being, and also food. You know, there's like three key essential survival threads that links us so closely to gardening. And then the building being about science and education, they're two of the oldest threads of the RHS. So the Home for Garden Science, our herbarium, plant pathologists, entomologists, and some new learning studios. We welcome so many school children, and we want to be able to welcome secondary school children and share the power and love of gardening. And we need the facilities to do that. So while on one hand it looks like a big building in the garden, you know, it's not about the building, it's about the work you can do in there and what comes from that. But I must say it's a very beautiful building as well. It's been designed by Wilkinson Eyre, who designed the Gardens by the Bay in Singapore.
Oh, so wow.
It's quite an impressive thing in its own right. So yeah, no shortage of new developments. And as you said, you know, yourself, Ellen, there's always something changing, something new. And because Wisley isn't, you know, set in time as a period garden, you know, there's always evolution, which makes it an incredibly exciting place to work at and to manage and to be a gardener there as well.
I bet.
I've been going to Wisley, I think, since I could drive. So since I was 18, 19. And I remember I always used to make a beeline. I always had a circuit. I would go to the trials, then I'd go up to the rock garden and the alpine houses. Then I'd kind of go down from there to the veg. And then I think to like the bigger grassed area. And yeah, it was almost just iconic. I love it. And still going now. There's more and more to see every time you're there. But what is your favorite part of it, would you say? What is your actual, where would you go and have your lunch? If it's not too far to walk.
My lunch is normally at my computer dropping cheese into my keyboard. I wish I did have lunch in the garden. You know, one of the most atmospheric parts of the garden for me is probably the pineetum, so the main conifer, the conifer collection.
Oh, correct answer.
I read the brief. So, yeah, the pineetum is over 100 years of age, so some of the first tree planting on site was in there. We've got redwoods that are, you know, over 30 meters tall, and it's just so atmospheric. You know, they're cathedral-like trees down there. There's lovely bulb plantings in this time of year under the conifers. And in the summer, when it's hot and dry, it just smells amazing. It's a really beautiful part. But Battleston Hill is equally gorgeous. The woodland garden is so hard to pick a favourite area because
you're known for your love of conifers anyway. So,
yeah, you are. So we would expect you to answer that, really, wouldn't we? But I think this might be a really good point to actually talk about conifers. First of all, sometimes they're misunderstood, aren't they? And it might be really good to just start off with giving listeners kind of the background and talking about what exactly a conifer is. You know, what is a conifer? Where does it stand in within gardening?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good starting point. And they're usually trees, but they can be more like shrubs in some cases. Often with needle-like or scale-like leaves, so you know they don't look like a conventional plant with a broad leaf, and they're usually nearly always cone-bearing. Sometimes those cones are absolutely tiny and they break apart on the plant and you don't notice them. More conventional things would be like a pine or a spruce, and the seeds are born and held in those cone-like structures. But they are, as you say, Ellen, they're quite misunderstood. And I think almost for people that don't understand them, the word conifer is just get some bad press. You know, people think, oh, that isn't something that I like, or they think, oh, that means a hedging plant, or that means a tree that's going to get bigger than my house. Therefore, I just need to avoid that group of plants altogether, which is a shame.
But how did that happen? Because the weird thing is, I remember when I moved with my parents to like their next house when I was a teenager, and I remember there was an old rockery, and this rockery had giant conifers in, but I think it had conifers that had been planted after being advertised as dwarfs. So I kind of guess one of my questions is there a true dwarf conifer? And is that partly what gave conifers a bad name, because they were never as small as they were advertised? And also Leylandii is in that mix as well, isn't it, of kind of being the most hated hedge. So why have conifers got that bad press? Where did it come from?
Yeah, there is a bit of a mess there, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And to answer your questions, Michael, so yeah, you can get true dwarf conifers that literally grow a few centimetres a year. But a lot of conifers are just slow growing. A lot of the ones that were sold as dwarfs in the 70s and 80s, they were just slow growing trees. And a perfect example would be something like a Chamis de Paris called Elwoodii, the cultivar name, Chamis de Paris, Lawsoniana Elwoodii, sold by the million as a dwarf conifer. And ironically, we used to have the UK champion tree of it on the conifer lawn at Wisley. And it was absolutely enormous. And this great big thing eventually fell apart because it couldn't really hold itself properly and it was full of wire. But so I think, you know, irresponsible labelling of plants, I do think there would have been a percentage of nurserymen that should have known better. That thought, you know, if we can label these as dwarf conifers, they'll sell, when really they weren't. And then the whole Leylandii thing. I mean, Leylandii is a beautiful tree if given space. It's not a suitable hedging plant. It needs clipping every 20 seconds. And people planted it around their little urban gardens. And it just turned into enormous trees. So you can understand why it left everybody with a bit of a bad taste in their mouths. And it's, you know, it's not like yew. You know, when you hard prune a yew, it grows back and it's quite useful. When a Leylandii needs cutting back into old wood, it's just, it's hopeless. You know, it doesn't grow again. And it's not particularly helpful for that. So, you know, for most gardens, Leylandii just isn't a good plant.
But what would be a good substitute for Leylandii? Because you said yew, which is obviously a conifer, but that's very slow to grow, isn't it? What would be fast-growing but also well-behaved?
Yeah, well, on fertile soil and when looked after, yew isn't that slow-growing. I think that's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a myth. And if it's really well looked after, yew is quicker growing. But something like Thuja occidentalis is a bit more forgiving of hard pruning. That would be better. Or you could do something really wacky and unusual. I've seen Cryptomeria japonica elegans used as a hedge. That lovely feathery soft.
I saw a picture literally the other day on Twitter, actually.
Really? Of a Cryptomeria?
Oh, I love that plant. It's beautiful. It's so delicate and ferny. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and... go on, Ellen. I can see you.
I want to just say something about Leylandii, okay? This is going to probably go against the whole world, but I really don't dislike it. We actually had, it was a big rural garden, so I'm not talking about urban spaces perhaps, but we did actually have Leylandii hedging, and I'm quite happy to be pruning away, so this was all good. But it was full of birds, it was full of like wildlife, it grew really, really well. Obviously, there wasn't much I could plant beneath it, but where it was just perfect, and I actually really quite like it. I like the colors of it, and I think if it is planted in the right place and it's looked after correctly, it can actually be a really great like conifer, you know.
That's backdrop as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So for that purpose, so I agree with what you're saying a million percent about, you know, it's just the same with any other plant, isn't it? Right plant, right place and everything. But I actually really like my Leylandii hedge. I'm just going to put that out there for you all.
It is. And I could also show you a picture of it in my parents' garden where my dad has clipped shapes into it, like some triangles, zigzag shape. And he's lovingly clipped it three times a year for years. And it is immaculate. And, you know, if you've got an exposed site, rubbish soil, really windy site, it does tolerate all of that. I mean, it got popular for a reason because it's so tolerant and so reliable, but it does just need maintenance.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg.
I visited one of my favourite gardens in Norfolk is Adrian Bloom's garden at Bressingham, which I'm sure you know all about because obviously his expertise is in conifers as well. And I'd never really appreciated conifers within garden design and within, I mean, to me, I guess it was always about the big conifers, the Leylandii, that kind of thing many years back, until I went there and I took away a couple of his books. And just seeing how they are used within garden design, within perennials, all the different colours and the different shapes and the different structures. And I mean, it's just an outstanding garden. So maybe can you explain, you know, why conifers really do make decent garden plants and how they can be used within kind of garden design?
Yeah, of course. They're just, you know, they can be as useful as grasses. So, you know, as grasses are used as a foil or to set other plants off or to be mixed in, you know, we happily mix in grasses to all manner of planting schemes. And conifers can be the same. It's just about understanding them. And one thing Adrian is really good at is pruning. And people are generally scared to touch conifers. They wait till they get enormous and then they take a chainsaw to them and then they look a disaster. Whereas Adrian's style of, you know, regular clipping, pruning, secateuring, shaping, and making things into clouds or hummocks or, you know, other kind of evergreen shapes to punctuate a planting is really effective. And if you look at some of the, a few garden designers are now starting to use them. Someone like Matt Keatley is using lots of dwarf pines, Pinus mugo cultivars, as an alternative to yew or to box. And let's face it, box has got so many health problems. And there's only so many yew domes you need to be able to see in a modern garden. And it starts to, you know, start to glaze over. It's like, oh, not another clipped hornbeam. So, you know, it's just fun and it's a different texture. And pines are really hardy. You know, they're really, really tough. And they'll take hot, dry summers, which we're experiencing. So there's just so much diversity there. And Adrian's book is brilliant. It's a really good pruning masterclass, you know, on renovating and keeping things in shape. So, you know, there's a real mindset change with growing conifers, if you're a king gardener, to not be scared of pruning them. And it's little and often, as opposed to wait 20 years and then get the chainsaw out.
I think that's amazing because sometimes when I've been at the IPM Essen show in January each year, I look around especially in the Dutch Hall, and some of those suppliers are displaying all of the conifers they've got. And sometimes I look at them and I don't even recognize them as conifers. There is such a range of, you know, bronze, gold, different shapes, different sizes. I'd say there's a conifer almost for every position you want it, because even down to bedding, window boxes, you know, those, what are those small ones that smell of lemon? We often use those in winter displays, don't we? That's,
yeah,
you know, conifer is a purpose, isn't it? So
yeah, there's such a diversity, as you say, and shade, sun, varying soils, you know, there is a conifer for every occasion, as ridiculous as that sounds. And it's just about having the confidence to use them. And, you know, probably going back 50 years, you know, people weren't using grasses. And then Pierre Oudolph came along, Neil Lucas came along, and suddenly people have stopped, you know, don't start saying, well, grass is something you mow in the lawn. We're all confident with them and we use them in all manner of planting schemes. And it's just about, you know, getting to understand them, seeing the diversity and seeing past the whole overgrown rockery, the Leylandii nightmare, which, you know, a lot of us do remember, but, you know, we are getting to the point now where younger gardeners, you know, people are younger than us guys, won't remember that. And their nan's garden won't still have that like our nan's garden did. Mm. And suddenly they'll think, why is no one using this group of plants? They're really fun. And it'll be the same with heathers. You know, their time will come as well. That's another quite unloved plant group. It'll get to the point where no one remembers why they were unfashionable and yeah, their time will come around again.
Yeah, that's totally true. So for anyone who is now thinking of perhaps using conifers in some way in their garden, do you have any varieties that are particularly good for beginners?
Yeah, I think both pines and abies are really fun groups to look into because they're really easy to manage. They're not too vigorous. They're hardy. So, you know, nothing's going to really go wrong with them. And if you've got quite a small space, do look at the Pinus mugo cultivars and do look at some of the abies coriana cultivars as well. They've got a really lovely needle. They've got a lovely cone to them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think just remember when one of the easiest ways to manage and kind of keep them in order is in the springtime when the new growth is pushing. So they have these like small candle-like growths. Just pinch it back, you know, just literally take it back by half with your fingernails or with your secateurs. And that way you can just manage the size of those really easily. And it's just getting into this mindset of little and often. And where you've got box balls, you know, that's a perfect challenge. Where you've got box that's struggling, that's not doing well, where you need an evergreen punctuation through the planting, challenge yourself to use a cryptomeria or a thuja or a pine. And you won't be disappointed. It's really refreshing to have a different texture in the border.
Mm. That's amazing. What about something really unusual?
Well, to try, to have a go with.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a sheltered spot, one of my favourites, and they're often grown under glass, but if you've got a sheltered spot and you can get it going outside, it's really, really beautiful, is Cupressus cashmeriana, which has the really icy blue, long, pendant foliage. So if you've got a sheltered spot up against a wall and it's got a bit of headroom, that is gorgeous, absolutely beautiful, but it doesn't like wind and it doesn't like really cold exposed positions, so it's a bit of a challenge. But it's really worth looking out for. Yeah. And if you've been to Edinburgh Botanics and seen the old specimen in the glasshouse there, it's quite a memorable sight. It's a lovely thing. The Victorians used to use it as a houseplant. But in the right position, it can grow outside too.
Uh-huh. Actually, before I move on, I've got a question then. What conifer looks the least like a conifer? Did I word that nicely?
We're meant to be celebrating conifers because we want conifers in the garden, not making them not look like conifers.
No, but like because the conifer family is so broad, and I remember seeing one once that had these strap-like leaves, and I was like, that doesn't look like a conifer, but it was, you know.
Yeah.
You know, cactus, there's Pereschia, which doesn't look like a cactus at all. Is there conifers like that? I'm just wondering. Because then you can get people to grow conifers they wouldn't notice. It's like when you try and give kids vegetables in bolognese, isn't it?
you know what? I've done that before when I've been helping people with their gardens. Like if I've done a planting plan. You just don't say it's a conifer. You say, this is polycarpus. This is a cunningharmia. And okay, fine, they don't recognize it as a conifer. And something like Podocarpus solignus, I mean, it looks like a weeping willow from a distance in time. It has a lovely, big, long, exotic looking leaf. And you know, like ginkgos as well, there's lots of shrubby, smaller ginkgo varieties, mm-hmm. which are great to mix into a smaller garden. There's a variety called Troll, which looks like the top of a celery. It's amazing. No one would ever think it was a conifer, you just wouldn't.
That's cool. I used to have a mini ginkgo that was only about a foot tall. It stayed that tall for its lifetime. It was beautiful. So how about conifers? Like, how can we give them their revival? Because, you know, I look at what's happened with succulents indoors. And succulents, there's every colour of the rainbow, all these different shapes, sizes. The same applies to conifers for outdoor growing. You know, you've got all those shapes, sizes, feathered, patterned. You know, how can we get that revival? Because they're actually still popular in Eastern European countries, but somehow in the UK, we fell out of love with them. What can we do?
I think the whole trend of Instagram is really helpful because conifers are really visual. They're really textured. They're so interestingly close up. And, you know, on my Instagram feed is constantly full of succulents, which are obviously, like you say, they're enjoying that revival. And so crazy. And who would have thought 5 years ago people would be, so excited about a variegated cheese plant? So I think it's people being brave and using them and then sharing that and talking about it. And you know, the gardening world is really good at sharing. So I think that's part of it. I'd almost be tempted to say we could really do with retailers dumping the whole conifer group. You know, basically, if it's a small shrubby or growing conifer, mix it in with the A to Z of shrubs. If it's a tree, put it with a tree line. True. But let's not have this dated corner with the C word, where if people do have a, you know, a mindset thinking conifers aren't for them, they're just not going to go near that part of the nursery.
That is so true.
It is very true. Now, obviously, you are working with conifers a lot and you're at Wisley a lot, but do you grow conifers at home?
I do. And even though my space is really restricted here in West London, I have a small collection of plants. Well, I say small collection. The whole yard is full to the point where you can't even sit out there. Oh. So, yeah.
Amazing.
Of course.
You have a jungle of conifers.
Yeah, well, a mixture of plants, but I do like to mix conifers in with things. And until very recently, I had an enormous woolamai pine in a pot.
Oh, wow.
But it got to the point where it was so big, if it blew over, we could barely stand it up again. So I managed to hire a van and get it to Wisley, where we've now planted it out.
Wow.
Which I feel very happy for it now. But I still have one of my all-time favourites in planted here, which is a Chamois de Paris called Whistle Saguera, which actually looks like the Saguera cactus, you know, with the arms.
Oh.
And it's got almost like coral-like growth, really tight, dark green foliage, and it's not very quick growing, so it just sits in a pot and looks like a little funny cactus-like conifer. And yeah, I think conifers in pots, you know, there's a potential for that. It's like any other plant. It's going to slow down its growth. You need to feed it and water it regularly, but you know, they're still versatile for pot growing.
I love asking people about their gardens because I think it gives you a little insight into someone's personality as well. You know, you just like when you are always kind of, sometimes people really surprise me and they're like, no, it's kind of like, you know, builders, and they're so they go out and build all day and they come home and the house is a complete mess because they have to finish the extension, or you know what I mean? And I always wonder about gardens as well, but generally gardeners, even professional gardeners like yourself, you're working all day out in a garden, you still come home and garden in your own garden too. You know, it's completely obsessive.
Yeah, it runs through and through. So when people say to you, you know, over a drink or a dinner, so when you're not gardening, what do? It's like, then I'm in bed.
It's
you know, when it's a passion and a love, you know, you don't resent it swallowing up all your spare time because you enjoy it, you know. It's my work is generally often in an office and it's often in meetings, and it's not so much hands-on gardening. So to come home, get the hose pipe out and water all my pots, I'm very happy with that. It's great fun.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. And I really hope that this helps to inspire people to think about using conifers more, actually. You know, that's part of the whole thing, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And thank you for having me on. It's great to bang on about one of my favourite topics.
It's a pleasure. Oh.
Oh, has Michael gone quiet?
Yeah, Michael's speaking, but we can't hear him. Oh, well, this makes a change.
Enjoy it while it lasts, Ellen.
Do you know what? I'm really sorry, Michael, but now usually when we finish up a podcast, I will say, you know, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. We have a little chat. And then Michael comes in at the end with like a really random and very funny quip. And I was waiting for it because he's always got something in his mind and it's always brilliant. But we can't hear him, so we can't get the quip today.
He looks like he's having a nice time anyway. He's smiling and chattering away.
He's laughing for himself.
God knows what he's saying, but he's having a great time.
So funny. Genuinely, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. And I hope everything's going really well at Wisley. I can't wait to visit again. I'm sure everyone else will be through the gates, jumping with joy as soon as, you know, we can visit gardens again. So this is hopefully a lovely insight into what's going on in the world of Wisley and conifers as well in the meantime. So thank you so much.
Oh, good. Thanks, Ella. Nice to meet you.
And you.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hey, how y'all doing?
How are you doing, darling?
I know you're going to my allotment.
Huh? I have, yeah. I will. On Thursday, yeah. I'm going to knock your shed down.
Excuse me.
Someone's written to me about the colour.
That's a true story, kind of.
What do you mean, kind of?
Well, I was
story, but you fabricated it.
No, there's no fabrication. You fabricated that to make it sound more dramatic. I've never received a letter, but I was told when I painted it that by two people that the allotment association might not approve of it, and so I might have to change the colour.
Well, because everything needs to be brown.
Yeah, everything needs to be so green funny. And brown. Anyway, no one's complained, and it's still purple, lilac-y, kind of.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's really cool, then. I'm going to check out your no dig, because no doubt it will need digging.
If you dig it, we're going to not be friends anymore.
But ain't your, I don't know if she listens to the podcast, but weren't your allotment neighbour, like, telling you it needed to be dug or something, didn't she? What'd she say?
So Mary, my allotment neighbour, who has been absolutely amazing, and she's been looking after everything in the greenhouse and watering, and she's planted out all my stocks and kept in touch, and she's just wonderful. But I think she was getting a bit concerned about the weeds. So she was like, when you went down to plant the vegetables out.
Yeah, I bloody weeded it, so I don't know where she got that from.
Oh, she said Michael didn't weed.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Such a, oh my God, B-I-T.
Oh, no, God. She's really nice, honestly. She's lovely.
I didn't go around the whole plot with a fine tooth comb weeding, but I absolutely weeded the open ground where we planted the vegetables.
Oh, you know, the allotment keepers are very, very particular about allotments. Anyway, no, it's fine, because I'm coming back next week.
Something I did do that I wondered might be against the rules at the time.
What did you do?
I washed the pots in the water butt.
Yeah, that's just so wrong. That's like really bad allotment etiquette.
I didn't wonder.
Yeah, that's a good way of spreading disease and pests.
Oh, is it? I was just thinking it would be a problem with sediment, but oh no, damn, oh, I really failed. This, you've never done that.
This is just how you learn when you have an allotment, you know? It's cool. I'm sure it will be fine, but yeah, I mean, thank you so much. You've taken plants from my mum's house. My mum was getting really stressed out because she had a billion plants growing. I know, gazillion plants growing. And
I got some kale myself here, which is ready to harvest very soon.
Nice. Yeah. Did you take she's got a load of cabbages. There's like about 20 cabbages as well.
No, I didn't want any cabbages.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
It's too long a season for me, Ellen. I'm too impatient for a cabbage.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm excited. Thank you very much for taking care of my plot until I get back.
Oh, my fingers smell of salami.
Oh, God, that's disgusting.
Oh, no, are you still vegan?
Oh, my gosh.
Are you still keeping up with that caper? Like your mother, don't I? Do you want a cauliflower cheese bake? When I was, obviously we've documented a few times, I was vegetarian when I was a kid, and there was such a limited range of things that I was then given, and one of those things was a cauliflower cheese bake. You remember these little breadcrumbed rascals?
Yeah.
But also like a oven-baked bean burger.
Right.
What else did I used to get thrown? Obviously, crispy pancakes, stuff like that. Yeah.
I can always just remember nut roast. There just wasn't really much else going on when I was a teenager when it came to vegetarian. There was some Linda McCartney stuff. I'm not sure we could afford Linda McCartney stuff, so I'd always get nut roast, basically.
It was a bit she, wasn't it? It's nut roast, yeah. You used to be able to buy it in a little packet, and you probably had to go to Holland and Barrett to get it, didn't you?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I bet in Galston you couldn't get it for love nor money. After that East Coast.
In Galston, it was a rare thing to be a vegetarian in the 80s and 90s, believe me.
It's strange to imagine that you could probably make your own nut roast, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, you can make your own
nut roast. Yeah. Having dehydrated ones, like, are we
matches? Yeah. There's loads of amazing recipes, and actually, obviously, food has improved so much and our understanding of ingredients and stuff. So yeah, you can make some amazing. I don't think I've ever eaten such tasty food than since I've been vegan, to be honest. Just because you experiment with ingredients and, you know, different foods that you might not have had before. And a friend of mine actually just recently, she's called the original gold tooth Roof, something like that. She's not my tattooist anyway. Roof, I've known her since college. She's just recently,
I love that we introduce people by their Instagram.
I know, it's something
how
like
2020
that.
2020 is that.
She's just recently gone vegan, and she, during lockdown, obviously she's a tattooist so she can't work, and she has been making the most amazing food. And the other day she made some mozzarella cheese, which obviously wasn't cheese, but you know, in the 90s that isn't something that would have turned up on your plate, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I used to be sniffing around Holland and Barrett because I was always interested in different foods, but yeah, it was kind of, it was always very strange and not really that well developed as it is now.
Yeah.
So. It's noisy outside. What's this commotion?
What's going on? Have you got a neighbourhood soiree?
I probably my neighbours are probably shocked at the way I live. I have deliveries of everything, literally. Yeah. So like, Argos came the other day with 15 items, including like a Hoover and a clothes dryer. And just, it's just all like piled up on the driveway. And then today, I had mail order car tyres.
Did you?
They fitted them on the drive.
That's cool. Oh, this is just convenient living. I mean, what else, you know?
Well, I'm in self-isolation and I'm not even in self-isolation. It's amazing, isn't it? Like, this is how it's done, kids. Come on.
Okay, but imagine, like, imagine being in self-isolation or quarantine 20 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, you would need a book. But do you know what?
Need a book.
Or two. I don't know, like, being bored when we're younger didn't, like, in retrospect, seem that bad, really. Like, you get through it. Like, I don't know. Well, you kind of look forward to things more and you kind of yearned for things a bit more, which is quite a feeling that potentially made you appreciate the things more.
But is it not different when you're just young? When you're a child?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know.
But even teenager, early 20s, like.
Oh, no. If we'd gone into self-isolation in my early 20s, I think I just would have.
Ah, but you're a clubber.
I was a clubber. I was a goer out, a drinker, clubber type of girl. So yeah, I think I would have really struggled even more than this. I mean, I've been just a lockdown diva. I mean, my poor husband, honestly, I've just been really bad.
Really?
Yeah, and even
the
when
weird
I think
thing
that,
is, like, it's, and I think I kind of learned this from my partner because he's very level-headed like that. There's nothing you can do to change it, so you kind of just have to go with it. But as I explained to him, it's like sometimes you just need to be, you just need to express emotion about it, even though you know it won't get you anywhere, you know? You're probably, you and Webb are probably exactly the same,
yeah,
aren't they?
Completely the same. Like, we've had this conversation before, haven't we? It's really funny how they align so much, but, you know, Webb is the same.
But sometimes it's just cathartic to complain about something.
Yeah, he's just super cool. You know, he's just like, but this is how it is. You'll get through it. You know, da-da-da. Let's make the most of it. And I'm like, what do you mean make the most of it? I can't make the most of it. I got nothing to do.
It's really weird, yeah. Because, like, you know the logic makes sense.
Of course.
But, yeah, sometimes you just need a side dish of emotion.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I know where you're coming from, for
you
sure.
Like your side dishes, don't you?
I do, yeah. Give me a side plate of judgment.
I did, like I've said before, spent about 7 weeks sitting on the sofa eating biscuits. I mean, I was always working. And then all of a sudden one day I was like, oh, actually sitting around eating biscuits is probably making me feel so much worse. So I decided to get up and get out and do more. And of course, when the 30-minute limit on exercise was lifted, I just started walking. And I used to be a runner and I used to run for miles and miles, but I can't do that anymore. I'm like too old and my bones ache. So I've been walking like 5-6 miles every day, and actually it's better than running, and it takes longer, but I think that you see more, you know, and you still burn the calories and
get outside.
And I just go out every single day, no matter what the weather, 5 or 6 miles, do different loops, go to different areas, see so much more. And actually that's become really enjoyable, and I wish I'd done more of that early on in lockdown. But when I think about it, I just think I didn't want to then. I didn't want to do that.
I think a lot of us didn't necessarily. Yeah, it's like, well, oh, did you make the most of the time? But what define making the most of the time? Not everyone can be productive all the time. And sometimes you need to just be, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah, just be. And someone said to me really early on in lockdown, which I thought was really good, you know, there's a lot of people who thrive in lockdown and, you know, I took a course or read loads of books or done lots of gardening.
Oh, did they really?
That's all amazing. That's all amazing. But it, you know, you don't have to thrive in lockdown. You just have to survive. And I was definitely
also,
surviving.
Like, for us, it's, they're people that potentially weren't doing any other work. Like, we were still maintaining a fair level of work as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, my, the writing side of things for me has gone crazy. So,
really? Is that cool?
It's cool, and it's all, it's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? Like, the copywriting that I do is you can do it anywhere in the world at any time, so that's really great. But then when you get more of it, you are still just sitting in on your own in an apartment writing for hours and hours and hours on end every single day. So, yeah. But it's good because it means people are interested in gardening, and that's amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Like, so many more people.
Yeah, I don't write enough. Sometimes I do it laying down using dictation, and then it ends up coming out with really weird words.
So what happened the other day, Michael?
The dictation went really wrong, and I think I was like, oh, kind regards and thank you or something, Michael, and it, like, when it dictated it, it came out, oh, Michael. It's good thing I didn't press send.
Imagine if you had press send.
I use dictation a lot, but you do have to just read it through before you move on. Yeah.
Funny.
Or send it. Yeah. Dictation fails. Like, sometimes I'll send you a message and it won't say at all what it means to say.
I love your messages, and I can always tell when they've been dictated because they're back to front or some odd word in the middle of the sentence. It's funny.
But it's hard to dictate with a kind of, I don't know, like singing style accent like we have. Do you know what I mean? It's not like we speak in separate words. I desperately didn't want to say I had a Suffolk accent. Well, I don't know. Are you doing your exercise now?
Yeah, I'm exercising now.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
What are you doing? What's the time there at the moment?
13:41. Act like you don't know the time difference.
I don't even know what the time is here.
I bet you rushed from bed to hummus bar, didn't you?
Do you know what? I got out of bed 15 minutes before we done this call, so...
Good.
Oh, thanks.
What's this lumberjack thing behind you?
Oh, this is just like my southern... This is for when I go, this is for when I go anywhere where it's redneck country.
Really?
So I feel like I fit in.
You have to. Is it a prerequisite?
No, it's just a really cool fleece, actually.
Oh my god, how lovely.
Yeah, how lovely.
Balcony, darling. I saw that you, you're getting involved in the community garden there, but then you're going to abandon it in a couple of weeks.
Oh, well, it's not for me. It's not my community garden. So it's, there's like a little community garden on one of the parking decks. It's two raised beds, but absolutely no one, not one single person has gone there to do anything or look after it. And I went by it.
People know about it.
Yeah,
like, who's going to enjoy the crops?
People should know about it. The crops are for the residents of the apartments. And I went past there the other day and it was just a massive big jumble of mess and absolutely covered in aphids. And so I basically took it upon myself to tidy it up. That's all. So it's not my community garden. And also I spoke to the guys at the apartments and said, look, you know, you need to do something about the bugs. And I'm not going to be back here until October. So someone needs to be looking after it. And so it's not my responsibility to look after the community garden. But we are going to do some really cool stuff for the residents here. I'm going to probably do like some Zoom gardening stuff for everyone, and in the autumn when I'm back, if I get back hopefully, then we're gonna have like an event in the community garden where we have drinks and talk about gardening and stuff. So at the moment it's not mine to abandon. It's just I just gave it a tidy up because I couldn't bear seeing it anymore. That's all.
Cool.
You kind of look like you're ready to leave.
No, I don't. I'm just dreaming about porcelain paving.
Is this for your garden?
It's the next big thing, you know.
Is it for your garden? And
alpine shelves.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that would be cute. I just bought loads of, alpines at Wisley yesterday. It's like,
yeah.
You just keep buying plants. You don't know where to put them, do you? It's like, that's what it's like.
That's just, you just carry on. And like, when people say there's not enough space, you can always find space. You will always find a way to add more plants and to add something into that garden. When you get going on that garden, you will steam ahead.
Yeah, and you'll never stop. Yeah, how much I love buying plants and stuff.
It's the best thing. It's better than buying clothes or having your hair done.
Cool. Can you have a haircut now or not?
We can here, but I'm actually saving my hair up for my hairdresser in Norwich. She does the best job. But the thing is, when you've got really long hair, you can just tie it up. So it doesn't really matter if you haven't had it cut.
But how do you know they won't do a good job there?
They might do a good job there, but I'm supporting my local business in
Norwich. Oh, I see. Have you pre-booked?
So they open on the 4th of July and I'm on the list. So they give me a date.
Oh, but a lot of them have already started to take the bookings.
Yeah, they're taking the bookings. Yeah. She's just got a list and she's allocating. She's got literally so many people, hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. They're just working out, you know, who...
Okay, well, make sure you get your split ends dealt with.
I don't have any split ends because my husband cut my hair a few weeks ago. You wouldn't really? Have any split hairs, no, because you get your hair cut. But, yeah, so when it got really long and straggly mid-lockdown and for something to do, I got my husband to trim the ends off with the kitchen scissors.
Cute.
And he's done a very good job of it, I will say.
Ooh la la. I better go shortly. I'm due on Radio Suffolk very shortly.
Of course you are, darling.
Yes, because I'm famous. I'm famous, you're not.
I'm going on NBC on Monday, actually.
Oh, actually, maybe you are famous. Yeah. Talk about how I abandoned my community garden.
Yeah, well, excuse
and other
me.
Such stories.
Yes, such a biatch.
What are you going to do?
We're going to talk, you know, I'd been during lockdown posting those videos about floralising sunglasses and making bracelets and stuff.
Oh, okay,
we're
yeah,
do
yeah,
a little
yeah.
kind of crafty thing with flowers for NBC, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. We have to do demo.
I can do a here's one I made earlier.
Because demo always makes me so nervous. Oh, no.
If it goes wrong, it's like the worst thing
I
ever.
I know.
No, God. It will be a here's one I made earlier for sure.
Oh, cool. Okay, well.
Have fun in Suffolk.
I'm a busy mum.
you sure are. Have fun in Suffolk. And I'll see you really, really soon as well. I'm actually looking forward to it. As much as we banter that we... But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you for real.
Heaven forbid.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Launched in 2019, their award-winning liquid fertilizer and soil conditioner is made entirely from maize. Naturally rich in nitrogen, potash, phosphate, and other trace elements that plants and vegetables love, it is approved by the Soil Association, Vegan Society, and Organic Farmers and Growers. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg. Enter PBP15 for a 15% discount as a PBP subscriber.
Thanks for listening. You should now be at least 25% more obsessed by plants.
Please follow us on social media. You'll find us by typing in the Plant-Based Podcast.
We also have a fabulous website. Go to theplantbasedpodcast.net.
So tell your friends, leave a review. Why not write a letter to your local MP? Please spread the word about the Plant-Based Podcast.
Oh yes, see you next time, plant friends. The theme music for the Plant-Based Podcast is an excerpt from the song Grow by Mikey James. And our editing is done by Gareth Patch of Semi Echo.